I'm sitting here with Jacqueline Woodson, author of critically acclaimed books such as Another Brooklyn, Brown Girl Dreaming, Beneath a Meth Moon, and dozens of others. Another Brooklyn is her most recently published work, and it tells the story of a young girl, August, living in Bushwick in the 1970s. August meets a group of girls, and soon they become inseparable. Another Brooklyn delves into the complexities of Black female adolescence, the role of community, motherhood, and intimacy. Thank you for being with us. So, my first question is, for Another Brooklyn, it has the dedication for Bushwick, 1970 to 1990, in memory.
Mm-hmm.
Is Bushwick, as you knew it, dead?
I would say, I wouldn't use the word dead, I would say gone. So, and gone forever. So that's why the dedication. And then I think the one of the things I was getting at with that, with writing that, is the idea that people come to a place and don't know the history of that place, and create this new space and name it, and you know, we call it Columbusing, and I wanted the space that I knew as it existed remembered. So, hence the eulogy and the kind of love song to a neighborhood that no longer exists as it did when I knew it.
And so WBGO is a jazz station primarily, and you write very early on in the book on page 2 that if August and her friends had had jazz music, or it says, we didn't have jazz music to know this was who we were. We had the top 40 music of the 1970s trying to tell our story. It never quite figured us out. So what difference would jazz have made for August and her friends growing up?
I think they would have seen mirrors of themselves in the music in a way that the top 40s of the 1970s, especially if you weren't listening to the Black radio stations, didn't give you. You weren't listening to Black singers. You weren't hearing songs of the Black experience. You weren't hearing songs of the Black female experience, or simply the female experience. And that's what jazz provided. It provided this. It provides this history. It provides this ode. It provides this mirror. It provides this space that you can walk into and know in a way that other music doesn't. So then when August gets to Brown and finally discovers jazz and begins to see her life and knows that she was not in this kind of outsider life, it becomes really important to her.
And did you have jazz guiding you through adolescence? And if you did, what did it mean to you?
You know, I had some. I mean, I had kind of the outskirts of jazz. Of course, I had Billie Holiday, you know, and I had Nina Simone. I had a lot of blues guitar, but I didn't have it the way I think would have been necessary in the way I'm trying to raise my kids to have it. And that it becomes a part of knowing who Ornette Coleman is, or knowing who some of the jazz greats are. But I think because I grew up in a very religious family, we were Jehovah's Witnesses, I didn't have a lot of music. So I got what I got.
And speaking of kind of music and jazz in particular, Another Brooklyn is structured very rhythmically. The thoughts and the sentences and the story flows kind of like a poem. Was that on purpose? And
yeah, that was trying to keep with the with that rhythm, with the rhythm of the story. It was the fact that I love poetry and write a lot of it, but it was also trying to keep this musicality and this jazz flow to the narrative. You know, the white spaces is those moments that in music where there is air, and that those moments in poetry when there is space around the thought so that you could just kind of sink into the thought and not be rushed into the next moment. And I feel like the same thing happens with me with the best kind of jazz, is that the music takes its time to tell its story.
How has being a poet influenced the way you listen to music, like jazz?
I listen very deeply. I listen very, I'm paying attention. I mean, when I'm writing, so when I was writing another Brooklyn, you know, there was Mingus and Monk and of course, Billie Holiday and Armstrong and all of those people kind of in my head, Ella Fitzgerald, just kind of helping me get to the rhythm of the story. But when I, when I'm listening to it and I'm not writing, I'm more of an engaged listener.
And so when you're writing, do you read or write out loud? And how much do you think about what it sounds like?
Everything I write, I read out loud, and I go back and rewrite, then I read it out loud again. So it has to sound a certain way in the world as well as look a certain way on the page.
We're speaking with Jacqueline Woodson, author of Another Brooklyn. A major kind of theme or thing going on in the book of Another Brooklyn was parenting, and it plays a huge role. You know, August is raised by her single father, and all the other girls, they have complicated relationships with their parents and seemingly with kind of adults in general and what it means to become an adult. What was kind of the thought process in creating these relationships between children and adults or children and parents?
Well, I really, in terms of looking at the black father, I think there is this myth in our society that he is absent. And I really wanted to show through that narrative that there are black dads in the world that are super engaged. So I wanted to kind of juxtapose August's dad to Sylvia's dad, both of, who, of whom want the absolute best for their daughters and have very little control over their daughters because in terms of teenagehood, parents have very little control, even though we think we have all of this control. Our kids are going to be who they are trying to become, and the hope is that you've put down a good foundation. But so I wanted to explore that. I wanted to explore the role of the absent mother, and I wanted to just get the girls on the page moving through the world with those various adults kind of at their edges, having very little and sometimes no impact on who they became.
Right. And so each of the girls especially have complicated relationships with their mothers, and they kind of at some points seem to almost mother each other with taking care of each other and trying to calm each other down and nurture each other. Do they carry on their mother's roles or their mother's burdens, and how are they trying to heal, especially August, how is she trying to heal from her mother's absence?
Well, of course, I think that's what friendship is. I think friends fill the places that family can't, and as a result, become family. So I think the girls have found each other as this way of filling in for the absent people in their lives. And for August, I mean, she's the ultimate unreliable narrator and is has this narrative of her mother returning, and in the meantime, those are the girls that are taking her mom's place. So I think they have a lot of roles, and also the fact that August's mom told August to keep, you know, women far away from you, and August defies that and finds this true friendship in those girls, in the girls that her mother had warned her against.
And so kind of what role do these friendships with young women have in terms of development, both for the characters in the book and kind of in general? Why focus so much on the intimacy of a friendship?
I think friendship is intimate, and I think it shapes us into who we're becoming. I think the girls act as mirrors. I think they act as windows. I think they show each other their own possibility. They show each other their possibility, right? So until Gigi met the girls, like, she knew what she wanted to do, but she didn't know if she could do it. And the girl and Sylvia with her singing, they're like, you should be a singer, you know, go do this. You should be an actor. You should dance, you know. And the girls suddenly have these worlds where they can walk into and be seen, and that kind of wasn't the reality for them before the meeting of their friends.
Right. August, later in life, kind of becomes an anthropologist and studies death, and throughout the book, there's tons of references to, you know, different cultural rites, funereal rites and death rites. And when her mother's dead, and then Gigi dies, and kind of also throughout the book, she talks about waiting for them to return. Is that her ceremonial or funereal rite?
It's a really good question. For me, I think it was a part of the deep denial. And her, but what became her rite is studying the dead, right? So she's so we see her looking back on Gigi. We see her looking back on her life. We see her looking back on her childhood. We see her looking back on the relationship with her brother and her father. And that all of that is gone now, right? But for her, it's, I always think of Dante's Inferno, in which the people who had regret had to walk through hell with their heads on backwards and always be looking behind them. And that was one of the, you know, darkest layers of the afterlife, darkest levels of the afterlife. And I feel like for August, she has always been studying the dead and always been kind of looking back and longing and living amongst the dead without acknowledging it. So when she finally begins to study the actual rituals of death and dying, she's at home.
And is Brooklyn a death that August can't get over?
I don't know if she wants to move past Brooklyn. I mean, I think that's not what she wants to move past, the place, but I think she wants to move past the moment of having her heart broken there by her best friend. But I don't see her as ever wanting to move past Brooklyn, because it shaped who she was becoming. So when I was writing the book, I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of Another Brooklyn, the title being paying homage to James Baldwin's Another Country, and of course, Colm Tobin's Brooklyn, that these different parts of Brooklyn exist. And in the end, August has come to terms with all of them.
And so kind of my last question, another kind of switching gears, is talking about religion and God in Another Brooklyn. So what role does God have in the book, kind of converting the father and the brother and then back again? And
What role does it have? I mean, it's kind of foundational for them, right? It's part of, it's what August comes to know and comes to, in some sense, reject. But for her family, it's kind of the glue. It's in the way that religion is for so many families, in the way that being a witness for, in my family was having that belief in a higher power and a greater good. And so and for August, it was a way to have that and then be able to leave it and go back into it and leave it and just see yet another Brooklyn, see the world from yet another side. As an author, it was a way of putting the Nation of Islam and Muslims on the page in a way to show the world that Muslims exist all kinds of ways. I think we have, when we talk about that the idea of the single story, I think we do have the single story for who Muslims are in the world, and we don't think, because people of color, especially black people, can be so invisible in this society, we don't think, well, you know, Muslims can be black, Muslims can be Arab, Muslims can be Puerto Rican, Muslims can be white. Here for me as an author, it's putting that ideology on the page through the gaze of a young black girl in Bushwick and showing that, yeah, here is another way Muslims exist. Inside the narrative, inside the family, it's a way of them finding some kind of serious foundation. The father, when he's approached by the brother from the Nation of Islam, it's kind of this moment of an entry into something that's not white Jesus and something where he can feel empowered and his son can feel empowered. And for August, it wasn't an empowering. For her, her friends were that.
Jacqueline Woodson, author of Another Brooklyn, thanks for joining us on the WBGO Journal.